Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Be Creatively Self-Expressed. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the line this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be joined by my very special guest, Esther DeAngelis. But before I introduce Esther, I just wanted to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is one of the first times you've actually tuned into one of our peopleyoushouldmeet.com calls. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Esther a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of the questions will actually be questions that have been submitted through the site prior to the call. The whole topic of creativity is something that I'm very excited about, because creativity and self-expression are actually two of my favourite topics for discussion. Now, I know I've known Esther for probably around about 4 or 5 years now, and over the course of our friendship, Esther has really helped myself to step more fully into my creative potential, my creative passion, and also my creative and self-expressed power. And Esther herself is a prodigious creative talent in her own right, and she also helps others express their creative talents through her coaching and facilitation work. So without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome our very special guest and my dear friend, Esther DeAngelis. How are you doing, Esther?
Hello there. Very nice to hear your voice, Damien.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Esther, I'm actually going to kick us off by asking a question that's probably on the tip of most people's thoughts or ideas when they come to think about creativity. And first of all, what I was curious about is it really possible for all of us to be creatively self-expressed, or is this something that's just reserved for creative, talented types?
It is my opinion, Damien, that we are all capable fully of expressing ourselves creatively, that we're all born with creative instincts, and they're very natural instincts for human beings to have. You only have to look at children to see it, the way that they create and imagine, and constantly creating and playing games and using objects that we wouldn't even consider to create with, and creating imaginary worlds. So children are very, very good model and example for showing us that actually all of us, we all have that potential within us. It's just that over time, through education, through upbringing, and through our peers and cultural conditioning, that we've lost touch with it. And there's also very much a cultural belief that there are the creatives in society, and then there's the rest of everybody else. Who's, you know, there's the normal folk that do normal jobs, and then there are the wacky creatives that make films and art and are the musicians, etc., of the world. And in fact, in some societies, for instance, in Bali, I have a very good friend who lives in Bali and is an artist, and we've been in communication about this for about the last 8 years, and we've discussed the concepts that actually creativity is implicit in everybody's way of living, that creativity is considered a very natural daily discipline, and it's inherent in their value of beauty and spirituality, which is very much a part of that country's culture. So it's only, I believe anyway, that it's a culturalized belief that some people are creative and others aren't.
Mm. So. Excellent answer. Now, I was just wondering if you could also tell me a little bit more about your own creative journey, Esther. Was creativity something that was actually encouraged upon you as a child, or is it something that you've come to later on in life?
Well, like most children, we're very much encouraged to be creative. Our primary school teachers encourage us, perhaps our parents and elder siblings encourage us. And if you look at kids out, you know, they're the ones dressed in brilliant colours and zany designs, and, you know, and their hair's all braided, or they have things in it. their hair, and then something happens, doesn't it? So yes, like most children, I was encouraged to be creative. I was encouraged to make Christmas cards for the family to send out at Christmas and to help make Christmas decorations and stuff like that. And very much mainly coming from that mother energy. But then there was a sort of a family belief, really, that creativity wasn't something that you pursued as a career. There'd be no one in my family who actually really earned their money and made a living from creativity, although my grandparents came to creativity much later on in life. My grandfather became a potter when he retired at 65, and my grandmother started creating in her mid-40s when the children had left for college. So I was very, very inspired. I was one of these very lucky people that grew up with an access to the most phenomenal creativity that my grandparents produced. Everything from, you know, large metal pictures to huge sculptures made out of wood in gardens. You know, they made it on a big scale. But I was really encouraged to, you know, to get my head down and be scientific and fulfill another path, which was really of medicine or something that was academic. So in fact, I looked into that. I did science A-levels, and then actually I reevaluated that decision because I felt that medicine was very much concerned with a curative application rather than a preventative application. That was the one that really interested me, in the whole psychological, the mind-body link. And so I ended up doing accountancy, like yourself, Damien. And maybe that's why I can be a really good model for you, because, you know, I went and I did something that was absolutely not my forte, not my passion, not my love. And so, you know, went to Liverpool University and studied accountancy for 3 years, and then came out and still thinking, gosh, I can't do this because this isn't really who I am, but not really knowing quite where else to go. I would say as a young person, I was very highly principled and, you know, felt that I didn't want to go into advertising and sales, and I wasn't very keen on what was being sold. And it was really the time before this big drive towards the environment and ethical business. So that was way back, sort of early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. So in fact, to try and cut a long story short, otherwise it could be here for the entire call. I actually went through a psychological crisis, and that's what got me creative. So I was training with a chartered accountancy firm to be a chartered accountant. I was studying for my first professional exams. There was a lot going on in my life. I had been very exhausted from going all around the country doing auditing, and there were various issues going on with my family, and I was super stressed. And as a consequence, I sort of lost it, and I found one day and another day that followed that I couldn't eat. It's like my throat closed up, and I thought, my goodness, I have to do something, otherwise I will die. Something, I have to change something in my life now, otherwise I won't survive. I was really scared. It's when the body brilliantly informs us when we're out of balance in life, and that's precisely what the body did. And that decision, in that moment, I decided I would give up smoking because I was smoking 20 a day. And the money I said, right, I would like to do something creative. I would like to do an acting class and an art class. And I actually went off and did a screen printing class and a 4-week drama class. And that was absolutely how I launched it. That was the seeds, those seeds were sown, and then followed study at drama school and a career being a fine artist for 10 years and then being more of a commercial artist in web design, graphic design and all sorts of things. So, yes, I've taught, you know, creative, catalyzing creativity workshops. I've taught dance, creative dance. So it's moved into many areas. So yes, I was a latecomer to creativity. I didn't really start being creative until I was 26, 27.
And why do you think so many naturally creative people end up in the accounting profession?
Well, it's interesting. I always remember sitting at the back of the hall in these professional exams and noticing how many people wrote with their left hands. And I was quite intrigued. And I thought, my goodness, I bet there's far more creativity in this room than I could ever, you know, dream of. And it's why do I think that there's lots of creative accountants? Well, I think it's that usual experience that many of us experience, which is our parents trying to protect us from what they perceive will be a life of poverty, rejection, dejection. You know, the life of the artist, as we know, is portrayed or has been portrayed throughout history as being the tortured one. You know, it's the tortured artist that to be a creative is a path of suffering, because in many ways it's perhaps undervalued. Well, it is undervalued in our society. It's not something that's considered essential, and yet it's so much part of what brings culture to a society. So we have this rather tricky dynamic, don't we, where we have high culture, which is, you know, classical music and opera and great theater productions and big budget films that shows us that we're incredibly intelligent and sophisticated as a society. And then we have all the arts that operate much more on the outside of that, slightly better paid anyway, centric part of society. And so, yes, I think many people are pushed by their parents for very good, you know, their parents have their best intentions for them, that they feel that they're saving them from a life of struggle, and that they be responsible and that they be practical, and that they then perhaps do the creativity as a hobby, you know, be an accountant and do a little bit of art on the side, or be a lawyer and join an amateur dramatic society, you know. It's That is the way it goes, I think, for many.
I can definitely relate to that story, having experienced that exact same emotions of sort of grappling around in my mind about this whole notion of being a struggling artist. And there was a part of me that just never wanted to allow even the thought of going along that path. And we're just quite similar in our entries to life, me finding myself in accountancy as well and being incredibly frustrated, and again sort of reconnecting with my own personal creativity around the age of 28 or so. So there's a lot of
back in return.
Actual parallels in our life experience there, Esther.
Absolutely. And the problem is that when you started going round down a professional career, which is obviously very time consuming, and you're young and you're wanting to prove yourself and everybody's demanding a lot and expecting a lot from around you, then creativity doesn't even get a look in. So you don't do the art class, you don't go on a sketching holiday, and it becomes lost. And so yeah, that is our work, is to rediscover that, because it is being creative, I believe, gives us so much magic. in life. It helps us move into a completely different space of being where we drop, where we're able to drop a lot of our critical, logical, sequential faculties, as if it were, and just move into a space of openness and expansion and exploration and allow something else to come through us. So it's almost like a spiritual path.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. Now, Esther, you are prolific as an artist in your own right, and I was just wondering if you could share with people your favourite modalities for creative self-expression.
Well, I have three, and I use them as some of them I use as a creative practice to because it's like I so for instance the first one that I'll talk about is dance. I teach yoga and I've danced, you know, since I was 4 years old and probably in my cot. You know, it, for me, it's a way of experiencing my body in such an alive, magical way. And I get so much, I receive so much from finding different ways of moving it. So I do a practice called Five Rhythms. I don't know if any of your callers have heard of Five Rhythms, but I thoroughly recommend that if they fancy doing some form of creative movement practice, that they look at that as a practice. It was created by a woman called Gabrielle Roth in the States. And it's really interesting. I'll just briefly say what it is, because it sort of, in a sense, mirrors a bit of the creative process itself. So it's called Five Rhythms because there are five rhythms. And the first one is flow, which is perceived as a sort of a circular movement. And it is what it says. It's flow. Then staccato, which is about how we choose things, how we define things, how we make lines, how we bring the edges to what we do. Then chaos, which is, as it speaks for itself, that place of chaos. And I think in creativity, quite often, we reach a place of chaos. And what people do when they're in chaos is they panic and say, oh my God, this is terrible. You know, I can't cope with this. I don't know what this stuff is. But actually what the Five Rhythms teaches you, and that's why I think it's a really good dance movement practice for anybody who wants to explore their creativity and deepen it, is that you just be with it. You learn to just be with it, enjoy it and play with it, and you come out the other side. And out the other side brings a lightness by allowing yourself to be chaotic and messy and confused and just observing it. And allowing your body to move with it, out the other side comes lyrical, which is the fourth rhythm, which is a very light, upward-moving energy, which is, I suppose, an energy that we associate with spirituality of freedom of movement as we move through the body. And certainly, you know, I teach very much around... my yoga practice, for instance, is very much centered around the chakra, energy centers of the body, and the idea that there are two currents of energy operating within us at all times. The one which is seeking at all times to be free and to get lighter, and the other which is seeking to condense, which is to manifest. And the creative process involves both of those currents of energy. And then the fifth rhythm is stillness. And out of stillness, anything can arise. So it's about creating spaciousness within yourself, which is also a very, very important part, to my mind, of what creativity is.
Some very beautiful metaphors for living. The thing that really, really jumped out at me there was just in the chaos section where you just allow your body to flow with the chaos. And I guess like we're living in a time at the moment where there seems to be a lot of change in the world.
Absolutely.
There's lots of movement, there's lots of uncertainty, and
absolutely.
Just that little tip of actually just moving or allowing your body to move with the change with grace is just really, really stood out in my mind there.
And the other forms of creative practice for me are drumming. I love, I'm really, really passionate about drumming. and thank you. And I've taught, you know, now thousands of people to drum because I'm so passionate about it, and I'll teach them on a table or a stool or whatever is to hand. And the reason that I think drumming is so amazing is that you get this direct impact with the hands on the surface of the drum. And there's something about that instant feedback. It's like to be an artist, you get instant feedback. You pick up your brush and you paint a picture or you start painting and there is the line in front of you or there is the color. And the same with drumming, you get this, but it's a very, very kinesthetic feedback with the sound. And it is a really magical tool for energizing who we are. As you know, Damien, because that's something that we've explored to some degree together, isn't it? It's drumming, and it for me, it's like dance. There's a quite similar energy in that respect. Is that it gives your body tremendous energy and vitality. And yet it can be so subtle, it can be so soft, it can be so delicate, it can be so loving, it can be so angry, it can be chaotic, it can be all sorts of things. And I think one of the beauties of the way that I choose to drum, which is I go to, for instance, I've been going to a drum circle monthly for 7 years now. And I also obviously drum with my husband, David, and also I drum with a few other people. We go out to clubs and if I go out dancing to a club, I always take my drum. Because what that seems to do is bring this whole new level of live energy present on top of the electronic music, and that seems to inspire and energize everybody's dance and creativity, so that's why I love to do it. But just to finish that point about the drum circle, it's my drum circle for many years was largely all male because, you know, there are far more women drumming now, but it just seemed to be that there weren't so many back then. And what I noticed was how the men that were gathered were very able to express themselves, and I would go through, like some of your participants sending their questions about feeling embarrassed, feeling, what are other people going to think about this creative expression? And I learned from them. I learned from the men that I was sat with in circle drumming to just feel it, acknowledge it, and let it come up and come through. And of course, as we know, practice is an incredibly important thing in life, that we become more relaxed and at ease at anything. You know, if we think when we first learned to drive, for instance, and how self-conscious we were about driving and perhaps imagining, oh my God, if we did this, that could cause an accident, and being super hyper aware of everything that we do and the mistakes that we make. But then with practice and practice and practice, it becomes second nature. And that is another idea about creativity and the creative path, is that creativity is like a muscle. It's something that requires practice, you know. And then as you practice, you become more confident, you become more relaxed, and then that creativity naturally bubbles through. So drumming, and then the third thing, of course, I'm doing an MA in fine art and media practice at the moment. So I am making art again, very much, and I've been exploring a huge range of disciplines, looking very much at installation and gathering different elements together to create something that an audience can participate with, using sound and objects that make sound, and also working, I'm particularly fascinated still with the medium of clay and the way that it transforms from this wet, soft, pliable material to something that's harder and firmer, and then, you know, the stages obviously of firing it. And actually clay is one of those mediums that I pretty much suggest to everybody if they're interested in the creative journey. I think it's a fantastic medium to start with, because it is so, it's inherently magical. You will get something from it, and it's so physical.
And I have had the pleasure of seeing many of your sculptures, which are truly just beautiful to behold, Esther.
Yeah.
And also, I love what you shared there about creativity being a muscle, and just the whole idea of just getting into a creative practice. And as you deepen or allow yourself to go into that practice, the creativity grows and strengthens. I really like that as a metaphor as well.
Yeah.
Now, Esther, we had a whole series of questions that came in from people from all around the world on the topic of creativity. And
oh, no. Wow.
Amazing,
very impressed.
And I thought I would just actually start you off with a question from Pippi in the United States. And Pippi asks, I'm one of those people who think they have no creativity. Can you help?
Well, Pippi, hi there. As you heard in my introduction, I believe that every person is creative. And what's happened, I suspect, that when any person thinks that they've not got a creative bone in their body, that they really aren't creative, it's because when you were young, you know, like lots of children, someone criticized your natural, free, creative self-expression, and that was possibly a teacher. If you think about it, you know, we're in classes of, say, 20 children or more, and we have a primary school teacher, and they're trying to teach and hold that space. And I think sometimes, having worked in primary schools myself, that, you know, that when there's so much activity, they become overwhelmed and they can't always be positive. I think they move into their fear. And also they have a set of objectives to meet, and they've got criteria to meet, and they're trying to teach a particular thing. And I think adults can be very, very clumsy around children and forget that children take things intensely personally and are very, very sensitive creatures. And so I would suggest that absolutely, Pippi, you are creative. You're alive. You're a human being. So you are inherently creative. And remember that creativity, or to create, is to make something happen that wasn't going to happen. So actually, you are creative in things that you do already, because we have this idea that to be creative means that you have to write a poem or paint a picture or, you know, go to a dance class. But it isn't. It's an attitude. It's a way of being, of making things happen in your life. And I'm sure you've made all sorts of things happen in your life, including incredibly complex problems as well as incredibly complex solutions to things. So my suggestion would be to think about placing yourself in a really supportive creative environment, because when we start out on the creative journey, if we have come from a place where we really feel that we're not creative, there has been, as I say, some wound to that inner child and that playful child. And so you need to nurture and like a parent. So it's almost like you're giving birth to this this baby that's going to embody this creativity and grow into a young child and an adolescent and an adult. So by creative environment, I mean something like a class, so that you have a teacher and you have other people who are at a similar level. So maybe a beginner's class in, I don't know, Raku, or a beginner's class in printmaking, or so that you know that you're sort of all on the same level, and that the teacher is there to create this nourishing environment for you. And the other thing that I when I was thinking about this question, and that I've suggested to many people over the years when they've asked me, you know, what should I do? I'm new to this. I don't know where to start. And people think that they have to go and learn to draw, and they have to learn music, and, you know, and I think those things are such big things that, of course, they cut us down before we even started, you know, the hurdle's too high. So one of the things that I suggest is to work with collage. So that is to work with photographs and to work with photography and magazines and cutting them out and then assembling them on a large piece of paper and playing with them. And then when you're happy with something, you then stick it down. And that way, you're not having to generate those first elements. And that is a really, you'll be amazed. Having been around many people who've done it for themselves, they've discovered all sorts of things, not only about their creative process, but about themselves. So I highly encourage that as an activity that could be of benefit to someone who's just starting out on the creative journey, Pippi. So I hope that begins to answer that question, and I'm sure there'll be other things that, you know, might come back and refer to that.
Excellent. I love the old idea of creativity being an attitude of making things happen.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Right, we have a question from Marianne in the United Kingdom. And Marianne asks, being a perfectionist, what keeps me from expressing my creativity fully is my own self-judging mind and the fear that my creation may not be up to self-imposed standards. Esther, do you have any tools or tricks to acknowledge the judging mind, but then go ahead and create anyway?
Well, this is such a pertinent question because, of course, the perfectionist is one of those energies. I see it as sort of an energy pattern, as if it were, that really can get in the way of not only starting something, but completing something, because it's never perfect. So, for instance, I remember I had an artist friend who just worked month on month on month on the same picture because his perfectionist was so powerful that he couldn't recognize when the picture was actually complete. And so yes, the perfectionist can be a brilliant energy because it can help you produce things that are extremely beautiful and with a tremendous attention to detail and care, but it's so in and of itself, the energy pattern of the perfectionist is not inherently good or bad. So what do we do about this, the perfectionist energy or this judgmental energy? Well, one of the things that I would suggest that might be helpful is to write down the thoughts of the perfectionist. So have a notepad alongside what you're creating in whatever medium. And every time that thought comes up is that you get it down on paper. So in a way, what you're doing is you're clearing your mind. So it can be, it's a bit like, I don't know if your listeners know of Julia Cameron's work, who wrote The Artist's Way, which is a fabulous book, and I highly recommend it to everybody out there, particularly if they feel that they're trying to restore their creativity, or they feel that, you know, it's a new journey, or they feel very tired and weary and lost, then I would say that's a very beautiful book to look at. And one, she has two mainstay practices that she suggests to recovering artists, as she might call them, or recovering creatives. And the first of which is the morning pages. And the morning pages is just really where you get to write stream of consciousness in the morning. So in a sense, what you're doing is you're clearing your mind of all the gunk and allowing yourself, and thus giving yourself some positive space to receive. Because obviously, if you think about it, I'll make this as an analogy as an artist, that when an artist paints a picture, you generally start with an empty canvas, with a white canvas. So there is nothing there. So what we do is we create through and within that space of nothing, from that space of nothing. So the same with creation in and of itself is that looking at processes which help you clear your mind. So it could be something like listening to a relaxation CD, because relaxation, of course, is where we let go. We're normally where, you know, there's various energies driving us, you know, there's the pusher driving us and the critic and all these different archetypal energies that say, look, in order to be a good person, in order to be a successful person, you have to achieve this, yes? And of course, that creates too many expectations and too many limitations for creativity, because creativity is born of a process of freedom. It's that fine balance again between needing a structure and needing freedom. But if you're coming to your creativity and your perfectionist is really rampant, it's like acknowledge the perfectionist, because they've got great things for you, because they will help bring a level of attention to your work that will support it in the end. But, you know, to set it aside, at least at the beginning, you know, to clear yourself, to clear your thoughts. And another thought that I had was that if you're writing those thoughts down, that you can actually create the opposite thought. So, you know, if the perfectionist is saying, oh, this isn't good enough, you know, then you create a thought, this is absolutely fantastic, and just experiment, just play with it, repeat it to yourself, oh, this is fantastic. You can, you know, say it outside, say it out loud, sing it, be creative with it. One of the things that I certainly use, which inspires me very much with creation, is music. Because I think that music can help take us into a very receptive space. And there is something about being in the presence of another person's creativity that models that for ourselves. So, and music is very, very inspiring and relaxing. So that would have, it certainly has had for me a very beneficial effect on my creativity. Another pointer might be to, I know, Damien, you've done a lot of NLP work, and, you know, you could use NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, for those who don't know what that stands for, which just really is a process whereby we look at the language that we use with ourselves and the outside world. The perfectionist has a voice, and what you could do is determine where that voice is coming from. It might be physically located in space, it might be it might be sounding in one ear rather than the other. It might be a masculine voice or a female voice. So it's like, get curious about the perfectionist. And then what you could do is play with it and speed up the voice or imagine the voice going backwards and make it something comical, because that's what's known as really as a pattern interrupt. That when we get into a pattern of thinking that's negative and we know it's negative because we can feel our energy collapsing, we can almost see our body collapsing and bending in at the chest and contracting, then we're in an energetic pattern that's draining you of energy. So the way to try and change that and transform it is to interrupt that pattern. And for some people, it might be a command, no, simple as that, and stop it in its tracks. Or it might be getting up and doing a bit of a shake, shaking, you know, or it might be clapping your hands, or, you know, there are different ways of breaking energetic patterns of thinking, and all of them are worth playing with. So really, just to finish, you know, the judging mind can be an absolutely amazing tool when applied appropriately. But when you go as Marianne has, you know, referred to, you know, she's saying I'm just trying to remember what she has said, about accepting that judgmental voice. And absolutely right. You can stop it, and you can. But if you go into battle with it, then you're bringing in the critic and all sorts of other very strong energies that only make that part stronger. And as the old saying goes, what you resist persists. So you know, be playful with it. I mean, and be. You know, use it, get curious about it, explore it, ask it questions. Perfectionist, what is it that you want me to do? You know, what is it that you're wanting me to be? And as long as we're alive, we're always, every single person is going to be full of judgment, every single person. You know, unless they're completely enlightened and awakened, you know, we all are judging ourselves and judging others much of the time. So it's something, the creative process, therefore, is a fantastic tool and gift to help us to learn how to be lighter with it, and thus to be lighter in the other parts of our life. Because being creative is not just about being artistic, it's being creative with your relationships, it's being creative at work, it's being, it's a quality of being, it's about learning that you have choice in life, that we don't have to be dictated by someone else's opinions, that we don't have to be dictated by our own thoughts and our own learned belief systems. So that's why it's called creative freedom, isn't it? You know, creative expression and creative freedom is, it is a process of freeing beliefs.
Yeah, that's an excellent answer as to so many different levels in there, and also a fantastic question, Marianne, so thanks for that.
Yes.
Now, I've got a question here from Lynn in the United States, and Lynn was curious as to whether she could instantly turn on her creativity switch.
That's a really interesting question, and I think it's one that performers that in particular must feel very, very powerfully, because of course if you're an actor and you're performing every night, you have to turn on your creativity switch even when you don't feel like it. And I think that's something in and of itself, that actually it's about turning up and saying, right, I'm going to turn up and be creative, whether that creativity I judge today is something or not. You know, so I think the first thing is that, you know, we do have to just show up. And in terms of turning on a creativity switch, for me, what works for me is getting into my body. Because I notice that, you see, for me, creativity is a natural state of being. It's who we are deep inside. And it's effortless. You know, when I'm sure everybody's had experiences in life when things have been effortless, they've just flowed very, very easily. And so I personally find that getting out of the head into the body and doing things like stretching and moving or shaking, having a bit of a release, is an excellent way of grounding myself, and therefore creating a space in which that creativity can then arise, because I'm less judgmental, I'm more in tune with my whole mind, body, spirit mechanism. Because of course what we do is normally, you know, we spend most of our time sat down and looking at a computer screen, probably for most of us, because that's very much what life has become. You know, we're no longer living in an agricultural or industrial society. We are in the information society. So we are looking at screens. You know, and that's not very creative. And it's so disembodied. I think so. That would be definitely one of the things is get into your body, and that will help you turn on your creativity switch. The other thing is to keep it simple. You know, creativity is in the smallest of things. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It's about heightening our awareness to what is present in this moment, and really looking and appreciating other people's creativity too. So the fact, you know, I'm sitting at this desk and I have a purple and blue memory stick. Amazing that I've got this information that can be stored. Amazing amounts of information that can be stored on a memory stick. I have a post-it note thing. Who came up with the post-it notes? I mean, isn't that an amazing invention of this glue just on and in these bright colors? And then I have a little bottle of scent. This is my husband's desk. I don't normally sit here. and you know, and start to just, I think there's something about that when we can appreciate the creativity that is all around us, when we can appreciate the creativity that is our body, we are moved to be in a place of wonder and grace. And from that place of wonder at this incredible thing, this incredible gift that we have called life, then we can, out of that, be inspired to create. So it is about developing awareness and sensitivity and grace. So, you know, and there are other things that I am aware that you might want to answer another, another couple of questions. But for instance, within NLP, there's processes like anchoring a peak creative experience, which you do through the body. It might be a physical click, or it might be a particular action with your body. And what you do is you visualize that peak experience, and you click your fingers, and you repeat it 4 or 5 times. And then when you want to be creative, you at another time, you click your fingers, and that triggers that memory, that very heightened emotional state and visualization and auditory experience. So that might be a possible way to instantly access your creativity.
That's a great answer.
Okay.
So we had lots of questions that actually came in before the call, but we also have a facility on the website where people can actually submit questions during the call. And we've had lots of questions actually file through as you've been speaking, but I'm just going to pick a very quick question from Chris, who is in London. Hi there, Chris, just to finish us off. And Chris wanted to know, how can creative self-expression help me focus on my real dreams and desires?
Aha, well, that's a really interesting question. How can being creative help me focus on the bigger picture, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how can I use creativity to bring what's important to me into focus? And, I mean, it's the very obvious thing, for instance, for me, that I have certainly worked with clients and has produced almost instant results, is to do things like create a vision board. So if you have a particular area that you want to envisage, or perhaps all the different areas of your life, the things that you would like to manifest in those areas, then you look for pictures that are symbolic, or you draw them, or I mean, it might be something, a color might even represent something for you. What I always suggest is to have you in the center in some form, whether it's a photograph of yourself or something, a brilliant saying that you always think of in relationship to yourself, so that you're in the center surrounded by this wonderful, inspiring vision of who you are and what you want to create in the world. Because what's also relevant is that, you know, we sometimes get fixated, don't we, on the having. You know, that when we have a really cool car, then we will feel successful. Or when we have the brilliant job, then we'll... Or when we have the sellout exhibition, then we will be an artist. And actually... From my experience, of course it's not only my experience, I mean most spiritual teachers and teachers within the personal development field would concur that very much we work from the quality of being, that out of the being comes the doing and then the having. And what that very much is about looking at what you value, and what you believe to be true about life, and really examining those beliefs. Because, of course, when we're born with no beliefs. And it's interesting that, you know, for the first 2 years of our life, we'd have no language either, because we haven't learned to speak and we don't understand language. So we aren't able to talk to ourselves either. So there is no self-criticism, there is no separation. Mm. And, you know, I think, I would suggest that, well, I would imagine this is true, you know, that we are connected to everything. Mm. And everything is connected to us. There is no separation. And then we go through this process of schooling and being in a family where we are told that we are something and we are ascribed an identity, you know, and often, sadly, it's not a particularly positive one. So, you know, apparently there's evidence to show that, you know, children get 9 no's to every yes. You know, it's don't do that, stop, don't go near that, don't stop doing that. So, you know, we are living from in a society really which is very much dominated by the central theme of fear, and that life is somehow wrong, that it hasn't and is not living up to our expectations. And if the world is wrong and we're not able to manifest what we think we deserve. And when you're a child, you think, oh, I click my fingers and it will appear. And then we learn that's not how the world works. And it's a rude awakening. But when we say the world is wrong, of course, we then make ourselves wrong, because we're all mirrors for one another. And what you project outwards, of course, you project inwards. So, beliefs. So it is about deconstructing beliefs and asking, how do I know that is 100% true? How do I know that it is really true? And I think asking questions, putting questions on a vision board is also an interesting exercise to do. Mm-hmm. So if you have specific things to manifest in life, obviously using techniques like guided visualization, and be creative with that. Play your favorite music in the background, or even create a creative visualization to music for yourself. If there's something that you specifically want to create and you can't buy it off the shelf, you could write that out and speak it out and record it and experience that yourself. Because as we know, nothing can be created unless it has been imagined first. Mm. So the imagination, which is such a part of creativity, isn't it? We have to think, I want a glass of water, and we visualize, and it all goes on almost unconsciously, a lot of it. But if you think, I want a brilliant holiday next year in India, you have to make it real. You have to, and that's part of the creative process. So you think, so you go and eat curries, and you go to an Indian area in your city, and you start looking at the fabrics, and you start building up this amazing story that's going to motivate you. Because unless something is exciting and alive and vibrant for you, you won't be motivated to do it. It's how many times, it's still, we're still in the month of January, and how many people here on this call have perhaps said, right, this year I'm going to lose one stone, or this year I'm going to meet the man of my dreams, or this year I'm going to go on a yoga retreat, or this, and then we lose our way. We're very excited at the beginning, we have tremendous enthusiasm, and then suddenly it drops. And what we need to do is create a system for ourselves of bringing these dreams to life daily, weekly, that they're not something that you put down, close in a book, and put away. They have to be living, breathing things. So obviously, telling friends, talking to people who are on a similar wavelength and who are your greatest fans, share. And some people have this I would say it's a superstition myself, but that's my belief, as if it were, that you have to really protect an idea or protect a dream. I say declare your dreams, because when you declare your dreams, other people hold you accountable for them, and they say, hey, what's happened about this? When are you going to do it? So that's all part of creativity. It's all self-expression to get your mates on your side and your family to believe that some of the things that you want to create for yourself in life are going to be extraordinary for you as a human being. Then you need to create it by expressing it, by talking about it, by being creative with it. So, I know that there's quite a lot in there. I hope that's...
Definitely. So, verify one thing. Yes. Last year, I did have a lot of curries, and I ended up in India in December. So that one definitely works.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Esther, we're coming up to the end of the hour, and you've just shared such a wealth of ideas and techniques for really helping people to sort of fully connect with their own creative self and their full creative self-expression. And I have no doubt that people on the call will have really resonated with your message. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can find out more about you and maybe connect with you on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, sure. Being a creative person, I have a few websites. I have a website called Coaching Catalyst, and that's got a lot of articles about all sorts of things, everything from abundance to relationships to quite a lot on relationships, actually, and other topics. So people might want to visit that, and I will be putting up a free product, I think, by the end of February. So they may want to access that. And that the address for that is www.coachingcatalyst.co.uk. Another site that they may want to visit if they feel they have a particular block around their creativity and it's something that, that I can work with is Living Hypnotherapy. And that's something that I do. I work with a mixture of hypnotherapy and coaching, and the address of that is www.livinghypnotherapy.com. And again, they should. I will be putting up a number of different products, including actually a product on creativity in the next month. Otherwise, if anybody actually wants to see my work, then as an artist, then you can visit www.joycatcher.com/Esther, E-S-T-H-E-R. And if anyone's based in London or is feeling adventurous and wants to come up to London, I'm actually co-creating a workshop with my husband David on Saturday, and the lovely Damien on this line is going to be with us on that workshop.
Yeah.
And it's and it's called Golden Keys to Confidence, and that is a workshop that really looks at what it is to be confident, because of course creativity is about being courageous, and so is living an extraordinary life. That in order for us to really realize our potential, we have to teach ourselves to be courageous and to question what is true. And so part of that workshop will be looking at the whole concept that really what we've created from our past are often stories that really disempower us. And in fact, they are what they are. They're just stories, and that there is a process where you can unpick them to reveal the truth, as if it were, which is always pretty enlightening. And we will be using a lot of creativity in the workshop, and we'll be looking at what it is you want to manifest and how to go about that as a process. So we talk about, we have various keys, one of which, for instance, is using movement and breath and all sorts of things. So I think it will be a very exciting workshop.
And I'm definitely looking forward to coming along on Saturday.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's been really interesting for me doing this call, and it's been a creative process in and of itself, and it is my first one, I'm not even sure what I call it. But it's been really, really wonderful, and it has, in fact, just even receiving the questions from the participants tonight, which I thought were excellent questions, and I'm only sorry that I didn't get to cover more. But I hope, you know, some of it was at least covered. But those were a gift, because they got me to also think how I can introduce perhaps some of that into the workshop on Saturday. So, you know, as everything, I think being creative is about being open in the moment and seeing what comes through and working with that. So this has been a creative process.
Just really wanted actually just to take this opportunity to thank you wholeheartedly for really giving of your time and experience and expertise over the past hour, but also for me, from a personal perspective, you've been very much a creative catalyst in my life, and you've helped me to really to take my own creativity to a whole nother level. So I just wanted to personally say thank you and just acknowledge you for that.
It's been a pleasure. And whilst I remember, I know my husband, I've got my husband's voice in my head, which is saying, give the website.
for the workshop.
One final, yeah. So just www.goldenkeystoconfidence.com.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you to everyone for submitting your questions prior to the show. And also, it's great to actually receive questions live through the webcast as well. Great. So thank you, Esther, and
good
night, everybody.
Good night.